you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on the Friday edition of the Wintrust Business Lunch, the Memorial Day weekend dead ahead. We will talk later with Danny Ecker from Crane Chicago Business about this movement toward putting ads on professional athletes' jerseys. You know, they do it in the professional soccer here in the U.S., but they've started in the NBA, the first of the Big Four, and I can't imagine that it won't just open the floodgates. So we'll talk to Danny about that a little bit later. Representatives from LaGrange. Now, get this. LaGrange wants more people to move into town, but not just people, millennium people. And they've come up with a strategy that they say will draw the millennials. It sort of sounds like a trap. All right. But first, we start with Andrea Haines, who's in the studio, the editor for Blue Sky Innovation. Andrea, welcome back into the studio.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be back.
You had a nice trip to Washington, D.C., I'm sure.
Did you pick up
anything that we should know about?
You know, it was a great trip. I hadn't been there in a while. I went to the National Portrait Gallery, and I think everyone should go there. It's not just dead presidents. I was amazed at how much modern art they had.
Oh, really?
It was a lot more modern than I thought, and it really took me by surprise.
All right, so let's stay within the government then, because one of there's a new incubator at Argon Labs, which is government run. I think Argon's one of those things we hear all the time and never truly understand. I know that's the case for me, but yeah. It's a government run lab, and they're starting now an incubator program. And I like the idea because so many incubators are kind of a quick start business. When it comes to science, you need a long time.
Exactly. So this, you know, the clean energy type businesses require, you know, to test them, to develop them, requires, you know, sophisticated mentors, extremely expensive equipment. So they believe they can kind of put their resources to work helping develop some of these ideas.
And they're going to accept how many people?
5 in the first cohort, which will start this fall.
Okay.
5 companies.
And here's the thing that struck me is they've got $4 million to spend on that. That seems like that's almost $1 million a piece. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is. But it is expensive, you know, expensive projects. There's, you know, things like lab time spent by engineers, things that are just high cost. And, you know, it's not like building an app. It just requires a lot more investment.
I just like the idea that so many people are getting into the incubator business, which is good. It's all good. But now the federal government is as well. Now, they do this at another lab, right? Argon's
not
the first.
They do. This is the second. So it's something they're giving a try.
All right. Let's go to the University of Illinois and learn about entrepreneurship. Because, once again, here's another thing where in the School of Engineering, they're expanding. My son's going to be I know people are bored with hearing my kids, but he's going to be a freshman in college. And I said, you know, you really got to look at maybe entrepreneurship. And I like the idea of something in general about ideas and crafting them and all that. But this is specific to engineering.
Yeah, so this allows, you know, it's sort of a dual degree in the engineering school, but it's bringing in some of those principles of innovation and business and pairing that with engineering, because, of course, a lot of those people do develop startups.
So when I think of what does an entrepreneurship degree get you? Because to me, it's a little more ethereal, right? It's about creativity and following through, but I suspect that's not what they're teaching in the classroom.
Yeah, it's funny because that's a big, you know, debate sometimes. It's like, is it even like, do you need a degree to do that? Which people may also say about journalism, which is a whole different topic.
The answer now is no.
But yeah, I mean, so you could certainly be an entrepreneur without a degree, but there's, you know, as an entrepreneur, you're also responsible for many aspects of a business, and there's also a lot there you can learn.
It almost seems like this is going to sound, I don't mean to demean it because I think they're great, but almost like a trade school where it's teaching you the mechanics of what you're going to come upon. It's not giving you the creativity or the idea, but it's giving you the roadmap that once you have it.
Yeah, and I think people just see students having tons of great ideas and trying to spend a lot of time on projects, but needing that little extra boost to kind of get those ideas potentially into the market.
Well,
so I think some of this new centers around that.
Right, and we've seen a lot of businesses come out of universities, the incubators at the schools, and a lot of these, they say that students at the U of I are working on these projects anyway, so why don't they get a little credit for it?
We see
a lot of them come out of the University of Chicago, and I know they just got a big boost, too, with some more cash.
They did. So the Polsky Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship got another $35 million from Michael Polsky, who is its named donor. And so the Polsky Center is closely allied with the Booth School of Business, but this is going to allow it to really impact the entire University of Chicago and sort of bring that entrepreneurial and innovation, you know, from the labs to the incubators, all that to the wider university.
So is it still part of the business school, or is it going to become its own school, or how does
that
work?
Yeah, now it's going to operate really in a way where it's going to impact the whole university. So it's going to give it more of, you know, just more reach across.
Which I like.
Campus.
I think that's a better way to do it, because
I
don't want to see, I mean, ideas shouldn't be slotted in one spot or another. And I think that's what happens if it's an engineering program or business program. Groupon is going back to the airwaves?
Groupon is back on
TV. It took them a few years to get their courage back.
Yeah, maybe. I feel like that was a total Andrew Mason moment. Some people may remember that during the Super Bowl 5 years ago, they ran some ads. There was one particularly that referenced Tibet that turned just very controversial. It was the kind of cheeky thing that they were always trying to do, and on that particular occasion, it just didn't fly. He's long gone
right.
from the company and, you know, different circumstances.
I'm spacing
now.
On the name of the actor. He was in Ordinary People. Anyway, he did this thing where riff on the fate of the Tibetan people, and then he said, "But I'm eating a great Tibetan meal." With
Was it Timothy Hutton?
Yes.
Yeah. So it just obviously appeared to be making light of what is a very serious situation. It didn't really go over.
And so now they're back, going back on TV, and as you said, maybe with a more polished approach.
It's a little more polished, and it definitely, as you referenced in a previous comment, is targeting millennials. It's kind of jumping off this idea that we/they don't necessarily want to own things and purchase things, but they want to buy experiences.
Yeah, you know, and that's what we'll talk about in LaGrange, because they're actually building apartments because they think millennials don't want to own a house. And they're promoting experiential sort of events rather than a dinner at a Tibetan restaurant, right? And so that's what Groupon now is going to focus on, is the experience stuff, or is that what they're going to stress?
Definitely. They're stressing that. I mean, there's still, you know, the goods. Those tend to be bought by women who are maybe a little bit older. In this case, they're looking to target really the young people who want to skydive or do really active things and stress that idea of buying an experience.
All right. The Cards Against Humanity fellas, or one of the fellas, is back in play. And these guys fascinate me because I still haven't played the game. And we actually bought it for our kids for Christmas. Nothing says Christmas like Cards Against Humanity. But now one of the initial developers has created a sex game.
They have, yep. So the sex game is out there. It's on Kickstarter now.
Why are they on Kickstarter? I mean, Kickstarter's for people who don't have the money, right?
Yeah, so Kickstarter is used basically to get attention in a lot of cases where, you know, it's one thing you may need the money to produce the product. In this case, I would say it's more to kind of get the word out and they, you know, to validate the concept is sort of the jargon for that, to like see, is there an appetite for it before you bother to produce it?
All right, so
if
this
there's
guy,
no appetite, you don't produce it.
Daniel Dranov has created this game that he says he started with his girlfriend one Valentine's Day. Go ahead, Andrea. Here, pull a card.
Yeah.
You read the card.
I did not bring the cards, and I'm embarrassed to really quote from the Kickstarter page. It's definitely, it's not sort of that soft R-rated, which is maybe a little more what I expected. It definitely seems like they're, you know, it's out there with the language, as you would, of course, expect if you know anything about Cards Against Humanity. They push the envelope, and this product is kind of doing the same.
Right. So backers can pledge $20, and then they get the game once it comes out?
That's the idea.
Okay, I don't know anything about Gwyneth Paltrow.
It's impossible not to.
Well, I mean, I know her as an actress, but I didn't know her as this newsletter sort of person, Goop. I don't know Goop, but she's gotten behind this sex game too?
Yeah, so the lifestyle newsletter
Goop?
That she runs, yes, is, you know, calls out products and things like that. So it got a mention in there, which I'm sure is a boost.
Okay, so she wants to be like an Oprah Winfrey when
she
it comes
kind of
to
is.
That?
Yeah, is she's she? Kind of has come into that where she endorses products and creates lifestyle discussions, and it's probably satirized maybe as much as
I know
anything.
People make fun of her a lot. Yeah,
yeah, but a lot of this stuff is crazy expensive or just things that upset people for social reasons or whatever. So
well,
it's, yeah.
That's what I love about cards or about this game, because it seems to me like you take any 13-year-old with an imagination and you could make this game.
Yeah, so, you know, and time will tell, I guess, are people interested enough to buy, you know, this version of it?
Yeah.
There is, you know.
You said earlier that women tend to go for the restaurant thing. I think men will be buying the Cards Against Humanity, or the sex game.
Maybe, you know, it's like, but it's designed to encourage conversation. I don't know if that's so much
That's what they say. It's not designed to encourage conversation. It's designed to encourage something altogether different.
That's true. That's
Andrea Haynes, thanks for coming by today.
Thanks, Steve. Have a great holiday.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 12:23. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here on this summery Friday afternoon. Tom Gibble, the principal behind the LaSalle Network, is in the studio as well. Tom, welcome back to the Business
Thanks
Lunch.
Thanks for having me on. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Got a big weekend planned?
You know, just hanging with the family. Hopefully a little bit of golf with my boys and hanging out.
All right, let's talk. I'm fine, too. Don't worry about it. No, actually, I'm working. We're doing the Business Lunch on Monday, so...
Are you really?
Tune in or call in, why don't you?
You got a deal.
So let's talk management today. today because I'm interested in this idea of how you identify someone who might become a good manager. And, I mean, usually it's like it's when it's someone's turn, it seems to me. Like they've been here 15 years, oh, let's give them a title.
Yeah, it's kind of like how the Republican Party used to run.
It used to run, exactly, yeah.
I think the key thing is really twofold. Number one, does the person have the characteristics of having empathy? Right, I think the number one thing as a manager, you have to have empathy.
Okay.
And
so you have to be close to your workers?
Yeah, I think it's important. The best managers I know have empathy. Now, they don't necessarily have sympathy. They shouldn't feel bad for them, but they should have empathy to know what it's like to be in their
shoes.
Right, right. And the second thing that's important for a manager is, do they realize how much work is going to go into being a good manager? Right? It's not just more responsibility. It's not just delegation, but your work changes. So if you were, whether you're marketing or sales or accounting or whatever it is, you now have to allocate a certain amount of hours invested in training people and invested in reviewing their work.
So you're saying not so much, is the manager, is the guy doing the, making the choice for the next manager aware of what that man or woman's skills are? That man or woman needs to know what's going to be required of them.
Exactly. Because too often they're like, oh, I want to be in those meetings. I want to set the direction of where we're going. But they don't necessarily think about, okay, but over the weekend, you're going to have to spend X amount of hours preparing for your staff. You
right.
have to come across looking like you know what you're doing.
And one of the things you said too is that you look for people who have strong relationships with their coworkers. Is that the empathy you're talking about?
Yeah, you have to be able to relate with what people are going on, and you also need people that are going to be able, I mean, it all depends on the culture of what the, whoever the most senior person is the culture they want to establish in the organization. But I believe that you want somebody who likes people. And it may sound so dumb or elementary.
No, it's a good
right?
point, though.
But there's a lot of people that want to get promoted for the sake of being promoted, and then there's other people that actually want to be around other people and help other people
want
grow.
Want a guide. They want to be a leader.
Absolutely.
A leader. There's the word.
And protect.
A lot of times, though, they say that the – what's the saying in baseball that – the superstar doesn't make a good
manager? The best player isn't always the best coach.
Is that the case in business?
No, I think, well, the difference between business and sports is you don't say, hey, let's find the person in marketing who stinks and have them be the leader.
Sure.
Right? In sports, you can have somebody who has all the knowledge intellectually, but athletically they lack the skills. In business, there is no athleticism. It's all intellectual. So you need people that actually can do it.
But isn't there a risk of taking a star player on a marketing team or whatever,
huge,
making him a manager, and then you lose him?
Absolutely. So you need to balance that very well. And you need to make sure that – so it's twofold. Number one, if you promote somebody who's a great player and they're not a good manager, you're going to lose them or you're going to have to fire them.
Right, right.
And the other part, though, is if you promote somebody who's not the best player over that person. So there's a delicate aspect. What happens in a lot of companies we see is they do it and they don't explain, they don't talk, they just promote and then they cross their fingers.
And you've said that time and time again, I think, you know, communicate with your workers, let them know what you're doing and why you're doing it.
And give a runway for people. So say, hey, we're thinking about doing this over the next 6 months. Here's where you need to improve in order to get there.
Tom Gimbel, the principal, the CEO of the LaSalle Network. Thanks very much for coming
in. Absolutely. Happy Memorial Day.
Have a great weekend.
You too.
You're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Kim Gordon. It is 12:35. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a Friday just ahead of the Memorial Day weekend. What the heck, let's just call it the Memorial Day weekend now. NBA playoffs are still going on. In fact, my Golden State Warriors survived last night against Oklahoma City to live another day. But one of the stories about the NBA this past week, and really I guess maybe the past 6 weeks or so, has been a movement toward putting advertisements on their uniforms. It's going to happen next year with the Philadelphia 76ers. Danny Ecker from Crane Chicago Businesses on the phone line writes about sports and business and is a guest on the Business Lunch and is with us now. Danny, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so what do you make of this idea? Explain for me first, why is it that the NBA is doing it and why is it only the 76ers going for it?
So, well, the 76ers are first through the door, essentially. This is very recent that the NBA officially voted, approved a three-year pilot program that they're going to say, okay, we're going to let our teams sell jersey sponsorships and allow a small logo. It's like a 2.5-inch by 2.5-inch patch On the front of the jersey, near the shoulder, that you know, will allow teams to sell to their partners. And you know, this is about as lucrative of a partnership as you're going to find. You know, I mean, up there with the big naming rights that these teams have, because the amount of exposure on TV and through merchandise sales that you get when you're in this role, in that position, you get really high value. So this is essentially just it's been a long time coming. You know, there's a reticence among major American sports franchises, not including the MLS here, because they've had jerseys, you know, brands on their jerseys for forever, really, for since they started. You know, there's just a reticence among the major teams to embrace this, you know, corporatization of their jerseys. Well, the jerseys are kind of sacred.
Exactly. It was one of the hurdles for me trying to understand European soccer when I found out that the teams weren't necessarily named for the towns. You know, that the team names are often big corporations.
Well, and there's kind of an interesting difference there, where on, you know, in some of these European soccer clubs, it's just more accepted to have brands on the jersey, whereas a lot of their venues, actually their stadiums, have more sacred names there that that they don't. I mean, some of them do have naming rights, but not as many as you see here, where you know, you can call almost any stadium anything, and the names change all the time.
Yeah, I did not realize that. So you're more likely to be at a generic, well, I'll say Wrigley, but let's say Comiskey Park, than you would be at U.S. Cellular Field.
Right, exactly.
So the 76ers are starting next year with this 2.5 by 2.5 inch patch, and eBay is the first advertiser. Do they have a local tie to Philadelphia, or did eBay just jump in?
Well, it's StubHub, which obviously is affiliated with eBay.
StubHub.
But StubHub, and they're you know, they just are they're an official partner, obviously, the team, and it was just you know, obviously StubHub's national global brand, so they're they just wanted to you know, they were the first one to sign the deal, and I think they got quite a bit of media exposure for being the first through the door, you know, and it's something that I think that they were counting on, that which they got, and they're paying quite a bit, reportedly $5 million a year to have their logo on the 76ers jerseys, and
which is not a very good team, right?
In fact, the worst team in the NBA this season. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the market plays out here, where other teams are going to start following, and you know, the Bulls may even pursue this, and it's, you know, the Bulls obviously for the bigger markets like in here in Chicago and New York and LA and Golden State. I mean, you're going to have some interesting opportunities, and you know, these teams that get a lot of national TV exposure are the ones that are going to command the highest dollars.
Yeah, and I asked about StubHub, whether it had a tie to Philadelphia, because we were talking in the newsroom here yesterday about, okay, what goes on the Bulls jersey? Will they be local or regional advertisers, or will they be big national ones, or maybe big national ones with a local tie?
And that's a really good question, and that's something that is going to be interesting to follow, because you know, because this is such a huge sponsorship asset, you know, it's not like just any little company is going to come around and sign a deal for a few years and they're going to pay, you know, $5, $7, $10 million to put their logo on the jersey. So it has to be a big partner from one of the, you know, probably a primary category. And it's most likely going to be, you know, it could even be one that's an international brand. That's one thing that.
Wow, yeah.
We're starting to see there's a few NBA teams, and the Bulls are one of them, that still command an international audience, relevant internationally. For the Bulls, it's mostly thanks to Michael Jordan still. But, you know, there's some of these brands that are, you know, the NBA is really big around the world. It's growing in popularity in China and other places, and we're starting to see some companies that don't necessarily have a huge American presence trying to, you know, partner with some of these big NBA franchises as sponsors. So we could see one of those maybe step in and try to do this type of deal. And it's, again, it'll be very fascinating to see which brands jump in with which teams.
I would imagine there must be a long list of companies that won't qualify, right? I mean, there must be categories where they say we won't take these ads. And then, you know, there are official NBAs. I mean, say, I don't know what they are, but say there's an official NBA sponsor of a car. Can a local team then put another brand on its jerseys, or they're going to have to figure that stuff out?
Yeah, and it is going to be, it's, you know, team by team. So, you know, yes, there are some, you know, Kia, for example, which has been the official, you know, car of the NBA. You know, that would be an NBA deal, whereas, you know, all the teams have their own
I guess,
you know,
they do now,
their own
don't
auto deals.
Sure.
Right. So, you know, that can be you know, something that it's unique to each team, and they can strike the partnerships that they choose. And you know, I think there's right now, it's maybe a little bit of wait and see, but I think all that, you know, in terms of you know, how fans are going to react to this type of thing, and now that the 76ers are first through the door, I think people are watching them to see the response. And you know, teams ultimately want to be able to monetize their jerseys, but they also don't want to offend fans, and they want to you know, keep things
in
perspective.
Danny Ecker of Cranes is on the phone. I'm sure that if they're bringing in all these extra millions of dollars, the fans are going to get a break on the ticket prices.
in an ideal world, yeah. You know, that will never exist. That will be the case.
where will this money go? What does it go, just to the hosting team?
Yeah, it's, you know, each team's bottom line, and you know, obviously there's revenue sharing involved in the NBA, so you know, it obviously enriches the larger NBA pot. So you know, it's good for a business. It's another asset that these teams can sell, and just the NBA is taking a measured approach because, like I said, you know, the other three major sports have not yet embraced this. They might, and they'll all be watching this case as well, but. You know, it's the first dipping the toe in the water here to see in this 3-year pilot program to see, okay, you know, how much appetite is there for this, and are teams willing to do it.
Now, this is a 3-year pilot program, but that doesn't mean, does that mean they're only going to be the 76ers for 3 years, or other teams can jump in as well?
Other teams will be able to jump in for that 3-year period,
okay,
and
okay.
You know, by all means, they could extend that, you know, past 3 years. I think it was just sort of set with a sunset so that it wasn't an indefinite.
They could give it a look.
Exactly. Okay. You know, the NBA is going to want to review this and see, you know, how it's working out for both the teams and the brands.
Well, look, 9-year-old boys have company names on the back of their T-ball T-shirts, girls as well.
Yeah.
Is baseball next?
I don't know about baseball. I feel like the NFL might be before baseball, if I'm, and that's kind of a shot in the dark there, but I don't know. I think that the NFL has obviously, you know, huge amount of demand and corporate demand, and they're obviously, if anybody who experienced Draft Town here in Grant Park in the last couple of years, it was as if, you know, corporate America threw up all over the park.
Wait, was there some branding there, Danny? I missed that. All right, so, tell me about, you're the reporter, but tell me about your heart. What do you think of this?
You know, I'm as a fan, I guess I've kind of become resigned to it, and I think that if done in a really tasteful way, it wouldn't bother me. I think I'd get used to it. You know what I mean?
Right.
I do love the purity of jerseys and the kind of, you know, iconic looks of certain team jerseys, but you know, it's not, we've seen it in other sports, it doesn't really bother me to have that patch logo, as opposed to, you know, I think if it goes to a full jersey logo, you know, jersey logo, I think that would bother me because it just it doesn't have the same kind of historic ties that I love about it. But that may be just me, but I think that the patch logo, you know, we've seen other honor, you know, patches that in the same spot where teams will put a little logo honoring, you know, like the Bulls did with honoring 20 seasons, you know, since the first title last year. And so it was, since the last title. And they, you know, that didn't really throw anybody for a loop. I think you just kind of get used to seeing something there. And if it happens to be a corporate logo instead of an honorary patch, so be it.
Danny Ecker writes for Crane Chicago. Listen, I really appreciate you joining us, and hope we can do it again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You bet. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson and Kim Gordon and Jill Egan as well. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's a Friday afternoon, 12:53. Are you a millennial? Are you in the market for a new home, or maybe even more importantly, a new town? The Village of LaGrange wants you to consider them. We are joined by the Village President, Tom Livingston, and Phil Fornaro, who is the LaGrange Business Associate President. Welcome, gentlemen, to both of you.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having us on.
You know, so that's Tom. I'm not used to having suburbs come in in to make a pitch, but it just struck me that you guys have identified this notion that millennials are a market to bring in to, I don't want to say rejuvenate the community, but to enliven, further enliven the community, and you've decided to actively go after them. Explain that for me.
That's exactly right. Everything we have to do is to keep an eye on the future. So we look at millennials who want basically two things, mobility and a sense of community. And so we, when we plan our housing, we have to be diverse around transit and other great things.
That's an interesting thing, because you said mobility and community, which they sound like they might contradict each other.
That's exactly right. Millennials want to be part of something that's a community, so they want to be alongside people that have been there for generations and also people that embrace entrepreneurship and our business district. And different kinds of housing. They want options.
So, and I want to talk about that, but if you want to draw these people in, and you're drawing them in by sort of advertising the fact that they could be there temporarily, is that a long-term benefit for you? I mean, what if they're going to leave in 5 years?
Well, we find once they get to the LaGrange, they want to stay
right.
in LaGrange.
Who would ever leave LaGrange, Tom?
You can get to anywhere in the world from LaGrange, Illinois. And a lot of people want to just stay right there on our main street and eat and dine and shop, and we embrace that.
You know what I should say? I mean, I've been there a couple times, and I've taken Metro out there, and it's a very nice, easy Metro ride. Big bookstore in LaGrange, which is key, I think, to creating that sense of community.
That's right. We've got a theater, a bookstore. Both generate traffic, and a lot of different kinds of restaurants and shops. And what we have is, if you're walking on LaGrange Road in the evenings, it's vibrant. There's people out, and that has really continued to build on our strengths for millennials.
All right, Phil's the president of the LaGrange Business Association. If a business wants to open in LaGrange, I don't imagine you would tell them no, right? But you would favor some sorts of businesses over others? Or how does attracting millennials come into this?
Yeah, it's real important, Steve. What we were trying to follow is that someone like Anderson's Bookstore picked us for a reason. And it's that sort of small town feel, but we have that urban feel as well. So what's happening and what we've seen is a majority of the people coming in town, both at the business level and as residents, are young people from the city that appreciate what we have and appreciate the fact that they can get things accomplished.
And everyone talks about the fact that millennials want experiences rather than goods. How does a restaurant sell an experience?
Well, see, that's the thing, is it's not just the experience. We have the LaGrange Pet Parade. That's probably this upcoming weekend. It's the weekend following next. It's the most important thing, is that they can come in and get the experience related to all these signature events that we have throughout the year that really draw attention. And the Business Association, their main goal is to drive sponsorships and great experiences for the association members.
Tom, the thing that struck me too about coming and preparing to talk to you is that you're building not single family homes, not condos, you probably are, but that you're touting an apartment complex.
That's right. Who would have thought? I mean, we are building a 254 unit apartment complex right near the Metro stop. Very walkable. LaGrange was voted one of the most walkable suburbs. That's what millennials want, and we do that in a way that connects neighborhoods with our downtown.
Very quickly, how will you know if you succeeded? How do you measure success?
Well, it's easy to see. You just stand out on the street corner and see the interaction with people. You see new people being involved in our community, and it's just a vibrant thing. I will co-advertise with Phil here. That pet parade, June 4th at 9:30. Come on out and have
so
a sample.
So, do you
of
think
it.
You'll like have to put up signs like "Hipsters Crossing" or anything like that? Are you be okay?
We always keep an eye on the horizon of what we need to do in LaGrange to keep building.
Tom Livingston and Phil Fornaro, thanks very much for coming in. Good luck to both of you.
Thanks you very so much for having us.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.